the Dorkadia podcast. This is Megan Spur.
Hannah Goldberg-Craig.
And Charles Spur.
Okay, so we literally just finished playing Superliminal, which, please correct me, am I getting that right?
Yes.
I kept calling it Subliminal before, and Superliminal.
Superliminal.
Superliminal, okay. Yep.
This game is a trip.
This game was a journey.
So, Superliminal is one of the games that we played the demo at PAX, mm-hmm. and it's the game that deals with forced perspective. It's the one where you are moving, like, chess pieces, right? Mm-hmm. And you try to make it bigger in order to move it someplace or to put it on a platform or something like that.
So if you walk up close to the chess piece because your perspective of it has it right in front of you, if you pick it up, it's huge. But then if you move further away from it, when it's further away from it and it appears smaller, it actually becomes smaller.
Yeah.
And that is only one of the perspective mechanics, but it basically is what everything is based on.
Yeah.
Yeah, the idea that you can change your view of something, which actually changes the thing, is
so that's,
basically
yeah, that's mechanic. The mechanic,
yeah.
Right? But it's also the theme.
Yes.
So, I guess, super spoilers.
I mean, the game's been out for 2 days. Do we really want to spoil it that much?
Okay, I don't want to. I guess I won't spoil it a lot. But it is a... Here's the thing. It reminds me a little bit of... You know, we talked about this before. It reminds me a lot of Portal. Right, there's definitely that kind of, like, narrator voice, gets a little sarcastic, gets a little, you know, it's not like breaking the fourth wall, but it's definitely not the voice that you would generally expect when you're, you know, going through dream therapy. And then it also reminds me a little bit of Gone Home or Firewatch it's leading you to a place and it's not what you think it is.
So we should probably actually mentioned that the plot is essentially that your character has gone to a dream therapy clinic. You are asleep and in a dream state where you are fully lucid and aware of what's going on in order to address whatever problems your character was there for.
Bless you. That was one of the Dorkadia interns.
Intern number three.
What is it like? Feelings of hopelessness and, you know, not...
Being out of control of something in your life, feelings of hopelessness, not living the life that you want to be living.
So the entire thing takes place in a dream state so that physical reality doesn't apply anymore.
This game was, gosh, it's kind of hard to describe. Ever since I learned, and I think I learned this like when I was a kid, that when you're learning new things, it's actually creating new neural pathways in your brain. And that's one of the reasons why it's a lot easier for younger people to learn stuff like languages than it is for older people. Their brains are literally mushier. I'm sure that is completely scientifically inaccurate. That's how I understood it.
It's
mushy. But ever since I learned that, I've always kind of recognized, like, I've always taken it to be very literal in that, like, when I'm working on something really hard or when I'm just starting to learn how to understand something, like, it makes, like, I feel like I can feel it in my head, right? Like, I feel my brain straining. I can feel new neural pathways being created just because that's how it kind of resonates with me. And I felt like that the entire time I was playing this game. And Megan and I kind of took turns piloting, but, like, all three of us were really playing it together and figuring out the puzzles because it is primarily a puzzle game with a really cool story narrative.
There's a lot of fun things you can do that do not solve the puzzles, but you can make infinite apples and very tiny ones.
Infinite apples that then get, like, rapid fire shot across the room. That was incredibly fun.
A million tiny apples just blowing in the wind.
So good. But yeah, like, it wasn't just the mechanics of this game that made me feel like that, like I was learning something the entire time. It was also kind of the point the game is trying to make about perspective and the theme that goes deeper than just, making a chess piece bigger or smaller, about how you can tackle different issues in your life by looking at them different ways. And this was just a very beautifully done, real experiment in helping you understand and learn that. I really dug this game. Like, if it wasn't obvious, I super, super liked this game. And it gets trippy, which I personally am always a big fan of. But it gets trippy in, like, just really, really cool ways. And it really makes you think it is very literal outside the box thinking. And, you know, there's a lot of self-help books and business books and stuff that help you, that try to teach you how to do that and try to expand, to help you expand like your different ways of thinking and looking at things. And this game does this 1,000 times better than any of that does. I think this is the kind of game that like middle schoolers and high schoolers should play, right? Like, I don't know, like it's training you to do a thing in a really cool way.
I played it the night before, by myself, just with headphones on, and there are definitely like areas that build a lot of tension that really play on tropes you may already be familiar with, so lighting schemes and just like the objects you find around you.
I think blood on the floor.
We thought we tricked Megan into playing a horror game for at least a little while there.
It does a good job of playing on those things and creating moods and atmospheres as you move through the game. So, yeah, like when you say it's a journey, like it really does hit a lot of notes. It knows how to play on psyche and like our established like catalog of what things mean.
Exactly. And it plays with all of the stuff that you've been trained to expect as a gamer. And there were also like, there were a couple of things in there that I really appreciated that were, there were two sections, and we don't want to get super deep into spoilers, but there were two sections with just the way that they were set up and the way that you're moving through these areas and kind of the cues that exist and don't exist reminded me, of the Greek myth of, Orpheus and Eurydice. When Orpheus is leading Eurydice from the underworld and like Hades is like, yeah, you can take her back to the land of living, but you cannot look behind you. And like, there are two specific sections of the game that I was just like, oh, this is really smart because this is not just using the tropes that we expect as gamers, but also the tropes that have been kind of the tropes that are tropes for a reason, right? Like things that have been handed down, things that we're supposed to expect. And it was just, it was super cool.
There are sections where it plays with not just perspective. I mean, it's a perspective in a way.
Right? Yes.
It plays with where your camera is facing and adjusts things outside of your field of vision. So that when you come back around, things are different.
Yeah.
Always interesting to see. Like, I've seen that done in different horror-style games.
That's exactly what I was thinking. I see that in horror games, mostly. Yeah. It reminds me of, oh my gosh, the thing that they found, data mining PT, that, you know, when you turn around and there's the, whatever the terribly scary ghost lady is, you turn around and she's there. Somebody data mined in PT to find out, like, what triggers her showing up. She's just always there. She's always behind you. Even if the camera isn't facing her, she's always behind you.
No!
Oh, yes.
Nope. Nope. Yep. Nope. Don't like it.
Yep.
Nah.
Yep. PT would have been the scariest game of all time.
Oh, yeah.
No!
Certain it would have been the most terrifying game of all time. Yeah.
Oh. But would you get to deliver packages? Because, come on. Is it scarier than damaging a package you're taking across country?
Only if your camera and, or only if your flashlight is powered by baby power. Death Stranding jokes aside. You're right. I've seen that in, like, horror games, but it's not something you see in other genres, especially puzzle genres. Like, that's one of the things I liked about this so much is it was doing very cool stuff with the puzzle game genre. Stuff that, like, it's very, very cool. I wouldn't say it's, like, groundbreaking because it does feel like there's a lot structurally that reminds me of Portal and a few other similar kind of games, but it really builds on that and does a fantastic job just taking its own twist on it.
Yeah, I mean, the comparisons that are generally made are Portal and Stanley Parable, but I think it does enough to differentiate itself from those that it doesn't feel derivative in any way.
I completely agree, yeah. If anything, there are sections that are definitely, like, homages to both of those games. Or you can really see that, like, inspirational DNA in the game, but it's not in any way, like, a ripoff or, like, at no point in time when I was like, oh, this is just Portal. No. Like, it's, Superliminal is definitely its own game in a very, very cool way. And it's really, really sticks to its themes in a good way. Like, there are some, cause I found this in other puzzle games, cause I have played a lot of puzzle games, including some puzzle narrative games. And there are often sections where, like, I don't know, the puzzles kind of drift outside of the overall narrative just to fill some space or, like, have some cool mechanics to play around with. Honestly, I feel a little bit about that in Portal 2 when you get to, like, the bouncy gels and stuff. Like, those are really fun puzzles, but it kind of breaks from the themes a bit.
Yeah.
And, no, like, everything here was very much training you to think about things differently, to not even think about things differently, but, like, you'd get used to something, and they'd be like, oh, no, 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 you gotta think about the thing you just got used to differently, even. That was very cool.
Well, yeah, that's what I, one of the things I really enjoyed. It's very tight.
And, yes.
And as it moves through sections, it doesn't spend a lot of time being repetitive.
That's a really good point.
Unless it does it on purpose.
Yeah.
Well, yes.
Yeah. For effect.
Right. Repetition for effect is one thing, but I mean, it didn't just, like, take the same, now make this block this size so you can jump up here. Okay, now do that with two blocks, and now we're going to do that for five more puzzles, right? Like,
yeah.
And they could very easily have done that and padded out the time of the game, because it's only about 2.5 hours of gameplay. Like, it was, I think that's about how long it took us. I think, Charles, you said that's about
how long it took you. Took me for my first run.
Okay,
first.
So
yeah.
If I were to play it on my own, somebody who is bad at puzzle games, it probably would have taken me 3.5 hours, if not more.
I don't know about that.
Less, because I just would have Googled all the answers.
I think 2.5 to 3 hours of gameplay is about where you're looking at with this game. So yeah, they totally could have padded it out, and it still probably would have been enjoyable, but I think the tightness of the game really increases the impact of the themes, and I don't know, just the enjoyment of moving through all of the environments. Because I agree, like, the environments are really, really well built, and there are sort of kind of sections of the game that you go through. It's a little bit of a looping scenario, but also kind of not.
When you finish, there is a chapter select, so you can go back to them.
Sure.
So, it does have 8 distinct sections, I believe.
And they are very distinct. And that was one of the things that I really, really liked about them. They were distinct without feeling like they were completely separate games.
So Superliminal is only available on the Epic Store at the moment, as far as I know.
And it's from Pillow Castle, did you say?
Pillow Castle Games, yeah.
Now,
it's interesting. I did look at a couple reviews of it, and the consensus is great concept, poorly executed.
Really?
And I will say, it's interesting, so Charles, you made mention at the end, you know, feeling a little emotional of a game telling you it's proud of you, right, for being able to change your perspective and doing this. I don't know if I felt particularly moved. I liked the, at the end, be like, oh, I see what you did there. Okay. And so it didn't necessarily feel like a big sense of accomplishment. I didn't feel like you, like, really made a huge impact on me by this, like, what you were having me do of change my perspective. I think it's really interesting, and I'm glad I played it, but I don't know if it made, like, a huge, like, this isn't one that's gonna really stick with me, like, and be like, damn, right? Does that make sense?
Well, because personally, what was really impactful for me was I didn't feel emotional, right? Because there was not, for me, personally, mm-hmm. there was not an emotional weight to it. What I liked about it was that I could recognize how it was helping me think about things differently and change my own perspective.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's not something that I see often in games, right? Where games actually make me think about things in a different way.
Yeah.
Or, like, train me to think differently. As opposed to, this is an extremely well-done story. Like, I feel accomplished because I worked really hard to get through
yeah.
something and went on this journey, and now it's over and I feel accomplished. And also, like, there was, you know, the weight of stakes and characters and,
yeah.
and that kind of thing. So, like, it's two different, they're both are very impactful.
Yeah.
And I enjoy both of them, but this one was definitely more about the really cool way that it helps you improve your critical thinking skills, which is just not something I see often in games that aren't Sudoku, right?
Yeah. It's, yeah. I'll have to mull on this a little bit more, because I think it did some things, again, that I would pair to Firewatch mm-hmm. and have, like, this moment that makes you wrapped up in it in tension mm-hmm. and you have that moment that does resolve itself. And I think it resolves itself pretty quickly. And then it kind of moves on. And it didn't necessarily keep that tension in me and keep me as quite on the seat of my chair kind of Now, the edge of my seat, I should say. Sorry.
Let me ask you, do you think that part of that could have been because we were sort of rushing towards the end?
I don't think so, because I think it resolved itself quite some time before we got to the end.
That's true.
And I'm not saying that you had to carry that theme on.
Sure.
I think that it changed. I can see why somebody playing this who's not, you know, might see that mechanic in a mm-hmm. different game and be like, you used this for a little bit and then it just kind of stopped. And you did this puzzle mechanic throughout the whole thing and this forced perspective change. But I think it, I don't want to say that it was poorly executed. I don't know if I agree with them on that, but I do agree that it didn't necessarily impact me as much as somebody else. But that being said, right, I'm getting different messages out of it than somebody else. And that doesn't mean that I still think you should play the game, right? Like, it's really fun. It's fun. You can sit and I love games that you can play in like a couple of hours.
Right? Like, I can't.
I have a sense of accomplishment because I finished the game.
Right. Like, I cannot think of the last time that the three of us, like, sat down and played through it. Like, it was, God, it was Undertale and, like, two sessions, and that was a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Now. Like, it has been a minute since we have just been able to sit down and play a game through together.
I
and
think
that
the last
was really
time
fun.
Was having some friends come over and play Her Story.
Sure.
Yeah. Or maybe at work, I actually forced my employees to sit down and play What Remains of Edith Finch. And this is why I'm not a boss anymore. It's an interesting game. I would say ignore Polygon reviews and just take a stab at it, right? Or watch some streamers. It's a fun game.
My only, and granted we have just finished the game, so I'm like still digesting it a little bit. My only real criticism, besides some of the awkwardness of just like the way some of the environments had space and like not enough space to move stuff around, and like I could tell there were a couple of times where like one of us was getting a little frustrated with just like trying to master the controls. That aside, they spell out the themes of the game for you in a direct narration. And they're like, this is the thing that this was trying to do, and this is why you came here, and this is this, and this is that. And I would have liked it if it had been a little bit more vague. If it wouldn't have been quite so on the nose and explained. I think it over-explained a little bit.
For a game about, you know, engaging your critical thinking.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I think we had all, I think Megan and I at least had figured out, I don't know what your experience with it was, but I think we had figured out, like, what the theme of the game was and what the point of the game was well before the narrator told us what it was. Mm-hmm. And so when the narrator went into kind of a lot of depth about stuff, I was like, I don't actually
Yeah, I was like, no,
this.
I got it. Let's like, just keep going.
Yeah, I got it. It's really cool. Yeah. Let me explore this more. You don't have to tell me exactly the thing, like, I get it. But that being said, if a younger person were to play this, somebody in middle school or high school or whatever, I think that narration is important.
That's true. Or maybe just somebody who's, you know, the idea of changing your perspective is new, right? So I don't know. Your mileage may vary.
We like it and think that you should give it a try.
Yeah. Yep. No. Solid review.
And if you do, we want to hear about it. Because I want to know how other people...
Yeah, I want to know how many apples did you make? Because I'm willing to bet that I topped you.
I believe that is true. Also, the little T-bars from the fire alarm.
Yeah. Also, all of the fire extinguishers.
Also, don't leave trash on the floor.
Not just trash, specifically the mini sodas, the baking sodas.
And the random sodas, green sodas, red sodas, yeah.
Yeah, there's almost always a trash can or a recycling can nearby, so, you know, you...
Don't leave your shit all over the place, and if you made the can too big to put in the trash can, then balance it carefully on top, which is what I did.
I am a little sad that Epic doesn't do achievements, because I am absolutely certain that we would have gotten quite a few achievements.
I think so.
Infinite apples.
Infinite apples. High speed infinite apples. Because we really got those
launching.
I got
some good projectiles going on those apples, too. I was pretty proud of that. Yeah. Anyways. So Superliminal was good. So the thing that the three of us have been sitting together and separate for a while now and have yet to actually talk about Mandalorian. And I have a lot of opinions. I have a lot of things to say. So I apologize in advance. If you have not seen The Mandalorian, we are going to discuss a lot of things about it. And
this is just episode one, yeah. By the way. Episode two will come out by
the time this is airing.
But it is not out at this point in time. So if you have watched both episodes, cool. We are going to do spoilers for episode one. Watch it first before you listen.
Okay, so
first, I mean, just watch it because you should.
Yes. Also, So very first thing before we dive in or anything. We all fucking loved it, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
We literally have not been able, like,
I know, anything.
We have been so good about not having fun until now. It was really hard.
So, the first episode was directed by Dave Filoni.
Yep.
Who is the showrunner behind Rebels and Clone Wars, and many other things, but notably,
the Clone Wars, the animated series, and not that, what is it, episode two, Attack of the Clones?
Yes. Not the one-off movie. And I don't know if it's the writing or if it is his direction, but there is so much of this episode that I could see. It looked like it could have been ripped right out of a Clone Wars episode. And I loved it. I loved the humor. I loved the direction. It was a hoot. It was so much fun. The humor is immediate. Well, maybe not immediate. No, it actually does start out pretty serious.
It starts pretty serious.
The humor is...
A guy gets cut in half by a door. It starts out pretty serious.
That's true. Okay, doors shouldn't do that.
I was so happy to see that. I've always wanted to see that happen in a sci-fi movie with the automated door, with any kind of like automated door.
Doors, no, it's those Iris-style doors.
Yeah.
No.
Well, no, even to be fair, even like... Like Death Star style doors where they like come straight down. Like well, they did that in Force Awakens with the tentacle.
Yeah. No.
Also, I think just to make sure that it's really obvious, because I didn't actually think I really realized this going into the show. This is a Western.
Okay, but Star Wars has always been a Western in space.
Star Wars has been just a fantasy in space. This is very much a Western.
This was,
I think it depends on what media from Star Wars you're talking about, because I do not think that Return of the Jedi is a Western, like, in any way, shape, or form.
I think A New Hope is a Western.
Some parts of it, maybe.
I think
I don't think anything is as explicitly a Western as The Mandalorian is.
Okay, I'll give you that. It is... I joked with Charles saying that, you know, A New Hope is a Western in space. This is just a Western in West. I still can't get over the humor with the droid that the assassin droid.
The IG-11.
IG-11.
Voiced by Taika Waititi, of course.
Yes. Yeah. No, that was... Again, great humor.
Mm-hmm. He'll initiate self-destruct. Stop!
Yes. I don't know. I was absolutely cracking up through the second half of the whole episode. I found visually it was stunning. This was on par with a movie on the big screen.
Absolutely. Easily. Like, there is clearly a reason that this series is only 8 episodes long. They put some production value into it. It looks exactly like modern Star Wars movies. And yeah, you're completely right. Visually, it was really, really well filmed. A lot of shots that were over the top homages to the original movies, which is fine. I hope that's not like really hammered home too hard through the rest of the show, because there were direct shots from other movies. But as far as visuals go, I was so impressed by the last battle sequence. It was so cool. IG-11 has this like cool like world like 360 whirling thing, and like it, I've never seen like gun foo done by a droid before. Like it was so freaking cool. And then like all of the action stuff with the Mandalorian, like it makes you think like, oh man, this guy is super super badass. And they do this like really cool, like, you know, guy comes into a saloon and does all this stuff in the beginning, and then like the next sequence He gets the shit kicked out of him by something called a blurg, which is, by the way, my new favorite Star Wars animal of all time, because it's a cross between a Gible, which is a Pokemon that is just all mouth, and, oh my gosh, I'm totally blanking out, the D&D creature that's a land shark, my favorite D&D creature.
Bullet.
Yes, a Bullet. It's a cross between a Gible and a Bullet, and it just beat the shit out of the Mandalorian, and I was like, that's a very cool way to balance your character being, like, a super cool badass, and then also, like, nah, he's not perfect. Like, he's not always going to win.
Yeah.
And that's really important when you're trying to set up a character story throughout a series. So I thought that was a very, very cool, just little, like, the way that they wrote that was very neat.
I like the idea that he knows how to deal with people, but when an animal just charges at him, he's like, what the fuck do I do with this thing?
Well, and that was one of the things that I really dug, too, was that it did such a great job of doing the Star Wars, like, crazy alien monsters that, honestly, we just haven't seen a ton of in the newer movies. But, yeah, like, stuff like the Rancor and the Sarlacc Pit and the fucking giant thing in the asteroid that tries to eat the Millennium Falcon. What the hell is that called?
God, I don't remember.
I don't remember the name of that
the,
thing.
The Minox live in it. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, the Minox are the little
the Minox, things. Yeah. The, well, they're big bat things, sure. But yes.
Yes.
Little by comparison.
Yes. But this episode had a lot of that kind of world building and, like, additive stuff to it, which is just, like, a very cool part of Star Wars that I love to see explored more. Rebels did a good job of exploring that.
Yeah.
Your point about IG-11 is, like, we've never seen one of those droids in action before. All we ever see is IG-88 just kind of like standing around in Empire.
Yeah.
And apparently there's a fan theory that got turned canon that Boba Fett kills him.
Well, that makes sense.
Nice.
Speaking of both Boba Fett and things we see in the background, did you both see the screenshot that captures a Mandalorian that is in Boba Fett's armor? Perhaps Boba Fett in the background of one scene.
Really?
Yep.
I did not catch that. I caught that the scientist dude, right, the one who's like, I didn't make this agreement, on his...
You mean Werner Herzog? Oh, no, the young guy.
The young guy, right. The young guy
that wasn't Werner... I'm sorry, yes. I was only paying attention to Werner Herzog in that scene because it was fucking Werner Herzog.
Yes. That is not him. He had a patch on his shoulder, and Reddit caught this where I found it. It is a Kamino emblem.
Oh, so interesting.
So the clones had that on everything because they're... Yeah, so... That's, again, kind of fascinating. I was really curious, where would this fall into timeline, right? So you're watching this, the Mandalorian, and when I say the Mandalorian, we're referring to, like, actually the hero of this
The
show,
character,
right?
yeah.
The main protagonist.
Pedro Pascal.
Because there are lots of Mandalorians,
yes.
As you see. But he has some flashbacks, and you see him as a young child, and as, you know, other adults and what they're going through. Now, take that and set it aside, and know that Filoni is going to finish the last season of the Clone Wars, specifically to do the Battle of Mandalore, which is where there's a lot of death and destruction of what happens to Mandalore and the Mandalorians. So I don't think that the timing works out. I think he would be he's not old enough, I think, for the Battle of Mandalore and for this to work out, right? Battle of Mandalore is pre-episode 3. So you're talking somewhere between episode 2, episode 3. This takes place how far after?
5 years.
After Jedi?
After Jedi.
Yeah.
Is it 5 years after Jedi?
It's 5 years after Jedi, which makes it about 9 or 10 after Yavin. So ABY.
Right. So I think that's far too long for that to be him as a child at the Battle of Mandalore.
And they also call it the Great Purge, so I feel like that might be something different.
Yeah, it's possible. So, anyways, it's interesting.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, I caught that, and I was like, wait, what? And then the ending.
Of course.
So, he's using his little receptor thing, remote thing, that's telling him if his quarry is nearby. And you see just a pile of junk. And I looked at Charles and said, immediately thought, are we, if we get another force sensitive child on this, if we're just getting another start to Rebels, I'm gonna throw something. It turns out, no, not necessarily. I mean, we might be getting a force sensitive child, but not like an Ezra Bridger sort of way.
Very, very much not so.
No.
Ben's still only 5 years old right now.
That was, all right, what species is Yoda?
We don't know.
Okay, so we don't even have a name?
So it's very, very interesting because Yoda's species has been one of the things that Lucas has always put off limits to pretty much everybody. There are not a lot of answers. There's very little background. In fact, there has only ever been one other character of canon, one other character of Yoda's species, and that's Yaddle.
Yeah,
from the prequels. Yeah, so this actually opens up answers a lot to potentially. But then also, the guy that wanted the Imperial guy who wanted the baby kept alive,
yeah,
and with that Kamino patch, makes you wonder, is this natural born or is this a clone of Yoda?
Yeah.
Which is...
Know that it's...
Wacky.
50 years old, which again makes sense, given that Yoda is...
900 by the time, yeah.
Yeah, yep. Yeah, that species clearly ages very, very slowly.
So, also, I need a plushie of that.
I legitimately would really love a print of, so in the ending credits, they have these gorgeous, like, concept art style closing credit backgrounds, and that framing of the Mandalorian reaching out, and then the baby reaching out... Because
it's a very E.T. moment.
It's a very E.T. moment, but what makes me super excited about it is not only of this being a Western, but this also being something, and granted these two genres super overlap, of this being very similar to like Lone Wolf and Cub, and those kind of like those like, you know, or The Road, right? Like those like super stoic, like badass guys. With something that like makes them small, something that's small and vulnerable, and like going through
that is Western.
You're right. Yeah. Yes. Well, I mean, when I think of Lone Wolf and Cub, I think of like the samurai genre, but the samurai genre and the Western genre have so many overlaps that who even knows anymore. But yeah, like that as a thematic element of the show is just I'm excited.
The music was amazing.
Yeah. The music was phenomenal. Yeah.
Sorry, you brought up possibly seeing Boba Fett's armor, and we actually know who acquired that armor on Tatooine.
Who?
It's a character by the name of Cobb Vanth.
Uh-huh.
He appears in Chuck Wendig's Aftermath series.
I see. So, okay.
He gets it off of some Jawas who have it.
Interesting.
So, they just have the armor?
I mean, if they got the armor, then the man very may well have survived as well if his armor did.
Oh, it was so soon after the Battle of Endor that, you know, that thing's supposed to take 1,000 years to digest somebody.
Yeah.
They wouldn't have gotten just his armor out.
So, I mean, you know, in the 5 years, who knows what happened. But yes, in the Mandalorian area that the main character goes to return the Baskar and have his pauldron forged. Yeah, in the background there is... It not only is the Mandalorian color scheme Boba Fett's armor, but there's a dent in the helm that's in the exact same place.
Oh, interesting. I'll have to go back and rewatch that.
Yeah.
I didn't catch it. I think, like, IGN or somebody caught it, like, Kotaku or whatever.
Yeah, I need to go back and watch place this, like, four more times.
Seriously.
Where they're just, like, assigning people to watch frame by frame who are like, I would have liked this show if it didn't take me 9 hours to go through 40 minutes of footage.
One other thing that I am super excited about the show, I really have a thing for stoic main characters. Stoic in a way that doesn't make them bland or boring. Like, a lot of action heroes are stoic and they're very annoying because they're just kind of like, they don't really have a lot of characterization or moments where you see any kind of emotional vulnerability. But just the way that things are set up in this first episode makes me really excited that, like, we're kind of going to have a better exploration of a character like that. And also because Pedro Pascal is a fantastic actor. I didn't actually... I had been avoiding reading too much about the show because I really wanted to be surprised. I didn't actually know until the end credits that Pedro Pascal was the Mandalorian. And I was so freaking excited because I just... he was so good on Game of Thrones. He seems to be, like, a legit, like, cool dude from stuff I've read about him. And I also love that we have a Hispanic, another Hispanic main character. Like, that was, my husband, who is Mexican-American, saw that and was, like, just, he's also head over heels in love with Mandalorian lore and loves all that stuff, but he was thrilled. Like, it was so nice for him to see that representation.
So far, still not my favorite Mandalorian. I think that still falls to Sabine. Sabine, just, her artwork was just absolutely fun. I liked watching her grow into, you know, her family obligations. I mean, I'm waiting for a Sabine and Ahsoka buddy cop series.
That'd be amazing.
So, yeah, but
somebody's got to go pull Ezra out of the fucking unknown reaches.
Forget Ezra. Bring back Thrawn. That's the one I care more about. Sorry, I've been reading a lot of Thrawn books recently.
Oh, Thrawn's gonna have to befriend Ezra. That's just gonna be awkward.
He doesn't have to befriend him. Just analyze the shit out of him. That's fine. I don't think he befriends anybody.
I really don't think he does, being as he's a sociopath.
Maybe Eli...
Vanto?
Vanto, yes. Yeah. I guess that's the closest he gets to it as a friend, maybe.
Somebody he feels like mentoring, yes.
Yes.
It's like, you seem pretty analytical. I will teach you my ways. Are we friends? Sure! Meanwhile, subscript of what's going on in Thrawn's head, I can use this one to my advantage.
Yes. That being said, if you anyone is interested, the Thrawn audiobooks, at least in King County, I'm sure elsewhere, are available at the library. Highly recommend the audiobooks, the new series by, gosh, Timothy
Zahn.
Is it Zahn?
Yeah. I don't know.
He's actually the same gentleman who wrote the original series with Thrawn, were amazing.
They were amazing, and they were also the first EU Star Wars novels ever that were okay, except for Splinter of the Mind's Eye by Alan Dean Koontz, who I love Dean Koontz's work. I really, really like his work, but it was a really weird book because it took place between A New Hope and Empire, and when it was written, Jedi hadn't come out yet, and I guess Lucas just didn't tell him that Luke and Leia were twins, so there's kind of a lot of Luke and Leia making out in it. It's not canon anymore. Yeah. I don't think it's even Legends.
No,
it's just... So, yes, I think everyone has tried to retcon the Thrawn trilogy as being the original EU books.
Like, it's not Legends, it's Scurrilous Rumors.
Yes, it's Empire propaganda.
Nice. So, yes, this new Thrawn, so far it's a trilogy. The first one was fascinating. Really, really, really enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. The second one was actually Thrawn and Vader, and then a lot of flashbacks to Thrawn and Anakin.
Interesting.
And leading you to where, with no particular reason why, except for Thrawn's nature of himself and how he puts pieces together, figuring out that Darth Vader is Anakin Skywalker, which is really fascinating. And then the third one now starts bringing you back to the Chiss and in deep space, and then a couple of other battles going on in that area.
It sounds a little bit like the newer Thrawn trilogy is more character and story driven than maybe the original. The original trilogy, which was published in the early 90s, I want to say, mid to early 90s, I want to say, was bordered on hard sci-fi, actually. Like, Timothy Zahn was a pretty, pretty dense writer at the time. Like, I remember reading those when I was pretty young, and they were hard to get through as a younger reader, especially compared to, like, other EU books, which were not... The Star Wars EU has the quality of the writing has wildly varied over the years. Luckily, most of the modern books, from what I understand, are pretty spectacular. I really need to read or listen to more of them. But I'm excited to check out the new Thrawn trilogy, actually, because I really loved the original one. They were hard to get through. They were very dense. Also, like, 30 million pages, so...
Yeah, I don't know. I like the Thrawn stuff, and I like Wendig's series, so.
Wendig's a great writer.
It's a good trilogy. Also has one of my favorite characters in it now, so.
Who's that?
His name's Sinjar Rath Velis.
Uh-huh.
He is a former Imperial loyalty officer.
Okay.
And he ended up joining a bunch of Imperial hunters,
mm-hmm.
Because he was on Endor and just skedaddled when shit went bad. Spent his time getting drunk and trying to ignore his Imperial past. And then, yeah, he gets brought in with a bunch of... The Resistance hasn't formed yet, so they're just, like, New Republic bounty hunters mm-hmm. who are tracking down Imperials. Anyway, I just like him as a character. He's flippant, fun, and also ruthless.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
So.
Okay, so this is a little bit of a departure from Mandalorian, but I have to ask, EU and, I would say, current or old EU and latest movies and old movies and everything, who's your favorite Star Wars character?
Is it a cop-out to say Hondo?
I see you're Hondo, and I would raise you Talon Card. Talon Card is the smuggler from Zahn's first series.
Yeah.
And that character is so much Hondo. You really should go back and read this series. As a matter of fact, so I've been listening to the audiobooks. And they even have the same inflection, almost the same voice acting as Hondo. It's crazy. Anyways, very similar character. Highly recommend. But I would not necessarily say that Hondo's my favorite, though he's high up there. Ahsoka mm-hmm. will still be my number one. Tied in second place is, gosh, no, that's not fair. Second place is like a three-way tie between Hondo, Ventress, and Darth Maul. Love all those characters. But yeah, Ahsoka number one.
I do dig Ventress and her, like, tragic evil story.
Yeah. Well, same goes for Darth Maul, man.
Yeah. I mean, once you get half your body cut off, it's hard to let that go. And maybe that just drives you a little crazy.
Little! Lots of crazy. By the end, he is just out of his gourd.
Oh, yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Hondo's just great. Anyways,
and Hondo is canon through the entire original trilogy. And exists now in the since Black Spire Outpost is canon according to Disney. So
yep,
if he has the Millennium Falcon, he's hanging out.
No, Charles has to go next. I'm still thinking.
Well, if it's not Hondo, or is it actually Hondo? Is that your actual answer?
I mean, I really did like Hondo. I love Sinjar as a character. I mean, if I wanted to go totally out of the way, Mr. Bones.
Yeah.
I don't even know who that is.
Mr. Bones is a refurbished B1 battle droid.
And
who acts as the protector of...
Murder!
he is the protector of Temin Wexley, who is Snaps in Force Awakens.
Oh,
so he's
right.
Just one of the pilots.
Mm-hmm.
Trained by, what's his name? The one that lived.
No.
Wedge. Antilles.
Yeah, oh, Wedge Antilles.
I was like, wait a minute, that's a Harry Potter
no,
reference.
No, no. Biggs dies.
Yes.
Wedge lives, trains Temin to be a pilot. Anyway. Yeah, Mr. Bones, again, you have to just, like, read this entire Aftermath series. It's great. Chuck's characterization of things.
Also, all available at the library.
God, that thing even features... That features Ray Sloan as well.
Mm-hmm.
Also a fantastic... Lots of good characters.
Yeah.
Chuck Wendig writes good characters.
Yeah, what do you know?
Really? Shocking.
I feel like my answers are less... Like, are more, like, very front and center characters that...
That's fine. Because if you're going to say Leia, I've got, you know, a lot of agreement there.
Yeah, like...
I just hope it's not C-3PO.
No, but his actor, maybe. Yeah, Leia is huge high up on that list because I love the character growth that we see from her, starting as, you know, rebellious princess in Rebels the whole way up to fucking general in the newer trilogy, and... There's so much about her as a character, and we see, it's so rare to see a female character go from young to, like, legit old, and still have this, like, really cool character arc, and she just has this resilience and dedication to her cause that is just, I don't know, you don't see it in many female characters. You don't see it in very many characters. You really don't see it in many female characters. And also just, like, resonating with me, the first time I saw Star Wars, I was 9 or 10, probably. And so with the way that her character has evolved over the years, like, I got to see this, like, you know, really cool, like, you know, my favorite character from the original trilogy grow up into a distinguished military leader and, like, go through, like, not having the easiest life and, like, you know, her marriage with Han was not this, like, you know, charmed thing that even the legend stuff kind of made it out to be. No, and I that's very, very important to me. That being said, I really freaking love Obi-Wan. I really, between Clone Wars, Rebels, and Ewan McGregor playing him, just, he was the best part, hands down, of the prequels for me. I am incredibly excited for the unnamed Obi-Wan series, especially if it's anywhere near the value and how good The Mandalorian is looking. I'm just over the moon about that. And Jaina Solo. I will always love Jaina Solo. I was introduced to Jaina Solo in the Young Jedi Knights books, which were, like, the perfect age for me as a budding Star Wars fan, and her character got problems later on with some of the issues that Legacy EU had at the time. But she was great. I really like Jaina Solo.
Yeah, I think between our choices, I think we have a lot of EU reading that people should do.
and also some that they shouldn't do.
Yeah, well, I mean, some of it is the old EU, some of it's new.
Be careful with the Legacy stuff is what I would say. Legacy EU has some real bad writing.
But if you stick around for specific characters, right? If you're looking for that.
It's true.
If you're looking for Talon Card, you can find the old Zahn books to be able to get that. If you're looking for Jaina, you know, Solo, you can find the specific ones.
Just don't read any of the Yu Zhongong stuff.
Yeah.
Just don't do it.
For Leia, I would recommend, I really like Bloodlines. It's a new EU book that's it is shortly thereafter the birth of Ben. And it, what happens when the Senate finds out that her father was Darth Vader, because it's been a secret all this time. Mm-hmm. And it's really interesting to watch her navigate that space as a mother, as a wife, as a political leader, as a woman that was tortured by her own father. And it's a really interesting book. I really liked that one.
I did not know that they made a book out of that. I have read so many fanfic about that subject exactly, because that is something that actually really fascinates me. Because in the old, in Legacy EU, the first book that took place after the Battle of Endor, I cannot recall what it was, but it was very good, and one of the parts that I loved the most was it actually had a section of Leia finally taking a moment to process learning that Vader was her father and going through that. And ever since I read that scene, that entire idea has been very, like, Leia's, we focus way too much on Luke's relationship with Vader. I want more of Leia's relationship with Vader, so I'm going to read that book.
Yes.
Right away.
Also at the library. I tell you, I get so many of my audiobooks from there.
Anyways. Right, so that follows after Aftermath.
Yes, it does.
Because Aftermath is almost immediately following Endor.
Sure.
And then Bloodlines happens just slightly after that because Ben has been born.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
So, yeah. There's a lot of stuff filling in this gap, kind of leading up to where The Mandalorian takes place, but nothing, I don't think there's any source material that really happens much in that time period.
Not in that time period. At that point, we start getting much farther, right? Well, then we start getting into, like, episode 7.
Yeah, because I think around that time is about when Leia starts thinking about the Resistance.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Resistance wasn't born as, like, an answer to the First Order. It was born as kind of her way of keeping the rebellion going, because she's learned that Senate processes aren't really very efficient.
And that perhaps the New Republic should not have repeated some of the mistakes of the old Republic.
Yes.
And they should have maybe rethought their governmental structure.
Okay, anyways, I'm going to end this because we can talk about Star Wars forever.
Oh, yeah.
And we will probably talk about it next time because then we'll have another episode of Mandalorian.
Only will we have another episode of Mandalorian, we'll also have Jedi Fallen Order.
Oh my gosh, oh, yes.
Lord, everything is happening.
Oh, it's all Star Wars all the time, and I'm here for it.
It's Star Wars season.
Yeah,
it really is. Also, I can tell you the character that is not my favorite Star Wars character and will never be my favorite Star Wars character, and I hate him, and I'm going to take heat for this hot take, but Kit Fisto can fuck off. I'm dead.
Fair. Anyways.
Underwater Jedi.
Fuck right off.
All right, I'm ending it on that. Thanks for joining us. You can catch us at Dorkadia.com, at Dorkadia on most social medias, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Music, and Mixer. Please give us a rating. We would like 5 out of 5 whats.
Well, I want more than 5 apples. I want infinite apples, but I will take 5 apples of various sizes.
Keep all the doctors away, even the dream ones. Thanks, everyone.
Bye-bye.